Welcome back to Digesting Dark, where we are tackling the Netflix series Dark one episode at a time, leading up to the premiere of season three, the final season of Dark, on June 27th, 2020. For this episode, we rewatched episode number 8, As You Sow, So Shall You Reap. And we are here to talk about everything that happened in that episode and how it relates to Dark as a series overall through season two. My name is Zach Brooks, and I am joined by the Gretchen to my Claudia, Aaron Brooks. Aaron, how are you?
Good. First time being a different species, you know, so I'm adjusting to that, but I'm good.
I'm sorry you got lost in the caves.
Yeah, I'm with my old new owner.
Yes. Gretchen. Yes. You did a good impression of Claudia. Gretchen.
Yeah, I would bark, but I don't want to alert my
dogs. Yeah, we don't need any more barking. There could be more barking if you did that. So, all right. So we are going to talk about everything that happened in episode 8. We finally are seeing the 1950s. I was telling you before we get started. I was like, I'm ready for the 50s. I think on the first watch, the 50s timeline is when I was really like, oh my God, this show is blowing my mind. It is not just about somebody traveling just to the 80s. There are even more times that they can go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the 50s are probably a pretty popular time period. I really like the 80s timeline if I had to say my favorite one.
Yeah. I mean, and to, you know, Back to the Future references galore here. In Back to the Future, obviously, he goes from 1985 to 1955. This is 1986 to 1953. So pretty close. And we open, I think we can just go through this kind of chronologically as things go.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll save the HG and the Stranger stuff for the end.
Okay.
So, you know, we open with the discovery of the two boys. Well, of course, we start with a William Shakespeare quote, which I thought was interesting. The hell is empty and the devils are here.
Yeah. I think it's just a war between reason, science and, like, love and reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think it's just kind of
Antichrist and some of the religious
stuff. I think it's basically saying they're both two sides of the same coin at the end of the day, really. Mm.
Yeah,
because they're both saying the same things, just in my opinion, because there's been Einstein quotes earlier in the season, or at least one Einstein quote, I believe, earlier in the season.
That's a good point.
And then starting with Shakespeare, it's like, you know, pretty opposite ends of the spectrum, yet they're both talking about the same thing, just in different ways. So.
Yeah, and even the title of this episode is almost kind of like the way it's written is Shakespeare-y. As you sow, so shall you reap. It's like, it's very poetic the way it's written. And, you know, usually you hear that phrase, you reap what you sow. So you hear it written kind of the reverse.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was like a biblical quote or something.
I don't know if it refers to anything. All right. Yeah. So, it was just an interesting quote to me because it's kind of like a circular quote. Like you can say you reap what you sow. You can say as you sow, so shall you reap. It's a much longer way to say that.
Yeah.
A little bit harder as well. So, it's almost like somebody had a piece of paper that said you reap what you sow, and they rolled it into a circle, and then it read differently.
I think that sounds a little bit familiar.
Yeah. All right. So then we're in the 50s. And we before we even get to the kids, we see a young Helge riding his bicycle. Kids in Winden love to ride their bicycles all over the place. And we discover the two boys at the site of where the power plant will be constructed. It is young Eric and young Yazin. They have their eyes burnt out, and they have clearly traveled through time from 2019 all the way back to 1953.
So, Daniel Conwald says it looks like they're in costumes.
Yeah, so we don't, in this episode, he's not identified as Daniel Conwald, but we do know that that's
in the credits, it says he's Daniel Conwald as
Credits are spoilers. Once season three starts, I'm not reading the credits because the credits identify like characters that you're not supposed to know who they are yet.
I guess I won't really talk about the credits then, because it does identify a couple other random people and just kind of lets you know they're random people.
Well, I think that you can talk about him with this. I just mean, like, once we get to new stuff where we don't know what's coming, like if I saw Daniel Conwald in the credits and I didn't know that was Daniel Conwald, like that's a reveal. I wouldn't want to spoil that reveal.
That's fair. Yeah. But in this episode, I mean, there's a lot of, I'll just identify them as we go, I guess.
But. Like random, but I think that could be a misnomer, right? They could put, you know, mysterious person, like they put for, the stranger, they call him the stranger in the credits. They don't call him Jonas.
So, yeah, but when it's bully number one and bully number two, that's okay. When I'm just like,
yeah, that was interesting to me. I wondered if those were going to end up being people.
Yeah, and so. That really sticks out very weirdly. But we'll get to that when we talk
definitely.
About that.
So, and we are introduced to a young, strapping Egon Tiedemann, the 1950s version of Egon, and, looks a lot different than his older version. I guess you can see how he could let himself go as he gets older. But this version of Egon Tiedemann, he's a, you know, handsome cop.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we just jump into the little bit of 2019 we see Ulrich in the caves and he is following the thread. The thread is leading him through the caves, the same thread that Jonas used. I did notice on this one, I hadn't picked up before, that the door handle that he picks up is a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah, it's the Nietzsche eternal recurrence.
Yeah, I always thought it was just like a handle. I didn't realize that that's what that circle actually was. And, I don't know if they focused on it more or I just didn't pick it up the last time.
Yeah, I hadn't even noticed this time. So good catch.
I also noticed that, that Ulrich is leading the way through the caves with a lighter. You know, I've talked a lot about how, like, I've picked up on characters leading the way with some sort of light. Everybody's using a different kind of light to lead their way as they're investigating things. That was a very long time for somebody to be holding a lighter.
Yeah, it was a really large flame as well.
Yeah, he must have done the thing that everybody did when they were in high school where you take off, like, the safety on the lighter so that you can make it have the biggest flame possible.
Yeah, but even so, that was like very large and able to, you know, stand up to a lot of wind.
And that his thumb, like, I feel like if I hold a lighter for like 20 seconds, I'm like, oh, all right, that's too hot. I got to let go.
Yeah.
Ulrich, thumbs of steel, my man.
Apparently.
Yeah. All right. So that before we see him exiting the cave, we get Helge coming home. This is, of course, we're talking about little boy Helge. And his mother, and his mother's name, I believe, is Greta. She's not identified by name in this episode. I wrote originally down Doris, but Doris is actually Claudia's mother. Greta is Helge's mother. She's very strict. She is mad at Helge because he's dirty. She makes him strip down, which I wasn't sure if this was just her being strict or if she's like...
seems to be insinuating some sexual abuse.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I don't remember seeing any of that, and I don't think we do, but
I'm sure. With Helge's story, would some sexual abuse as a little child not add up?
No, yeah, it totally would make sense.
So because it seems like I noticed a lot in this scene, again, facial features. As a poker player, I maybe just kind of trained to really recognize those, but facial tics, those really instant type of reactions tell everything. And when Helge's looking at his mother, very serious, very scared. When Bernd walks in, they're all smiling at each other. He's like relieved. He's really happy. They really have a good relationship.
It did seem like a very different, like you had the one very strict parent and the like jovial man.
And it felt like when Bernd walked in, he looked and knew what was going on and he was kind of saving Helge in a way by showing up. And it's like maybe an unspoken thing between Bernd and Greta, them both knowing the secret that, of what Greta does.
Yeah, and we do know that you know, once we get to the 80s and Bernd is in the wheelchair, Greta is nowhere to be found. I don't think she's in any of the pictures of their family.
And this is just this is completely wild speculation theory, but Helge's going to end up being his own father probably, because he's probably going to go back somehow to the 50s as like the middle-aged Helge and sleep with Greta, and he's actually Greta's father, or Helge's father. That's just a wild theory.
I mean, that would make sense with like the scars of sexual abuse that he has some weird mother issues, but you don't think that Helge is burned, correct?
No, I think Helge is the, when Greta is talking to Noah about how gay could be somebody else's.
Mm.
I think, or whoever she's talking to about that.
Yeah, I think she does talk to Noah. That's an episode or two.
That may be next episode. But either way, I do remember that coming up and her specifically doubting if Bernd is the father. So I think Helge being Helge's father is a prime suspect. Mm.
I also noticed in this scene that she slaps him in the ear. She pulls on his ear. I don't remember which one it was, because he gets both slapped on the ear and pulled on the ear. So yeah, they're making a point of people having physical impact on the part of him that will eventually be scarred by Ulrich later on in that.
The next thing I did notice with Helge is when he tells Bernd about the two dead kids at the construction site.
Right.
Bernd and Greta both end up looking at each other. Maybe it's just because Bernd is so obsessed with this power plant being the key to success to his family. Or maybe it's because they have been told or warned or about something maybe coming like this. So,
well, and we don't know that I can remember. Maybe we get some in season two, but I don't think we know much about their history, either of them.
No, I think Bernd is pretty missing from season two, if I remember correctly.
I feel like Bernd in general, I've watched the show, I'm very familiar with the show, and the fact that he was in a wheelchair, I did not remember. I knew that he was
the cane.
He has the cane. So, and I was wondering too, is it, you know, this is another thing like Waller's eye that we're kind of questioning, and we'll probably find out the answer to what happened. But, you know, is it that he just has some degenerative disorder that makes his, makes him unable to walk, and then it just gets so much worse over 30 years that he's in a wheelchair? Or does something happen to him that actually puts him into a wheelchair?
I think it's something I've always felt like it's something to do with his constant exposure and proximity to radiation and things like that.
That would make sense. Yeah.
So, and slowly poisoning his body.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've always taken it as. I don't think there's a point where I think it's some sort of degenerative for whatever reason. I assume it's kind of goes with you reap what you sow type of thing, where it's like you have been around this material and dealing and making these lies and doing everything you can to protect it for so long that it's what ends up being his undoing.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
But that's all I noticed from there.
It'll be interesting to watch those two. I feel like there's the three mother characters that are all from this time period. We have Agnes, we have Doris, who is Claudia's mother, and we have Greta, who is Helge's mother. And I guess we have the three girls from the present period, the three mothers from the present period, with Katarina, Hannah, and Claudia. Or Katarina, Hannah, and Regina, I mean.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if we have the three mothers from the 80s. We have Jana, we have Ines, and is there another third mother? I guess Claudia would be the third mother from the 80s. So we do kind of have three mothers in each time period. So, I also noticed that Greta says to Helge that she has the coins for him to give to Claudia, which, you know, coins obviously are significant in this show because they have the coins around characters' necks when they travel through time. But I think this was just paying Claudia for tutoring Helge.
Yeah, and he forgets them anyways.
Yeah.
I think that was it. Also, it's brought up a lot in this episode. I noticed people saying to other that they're going to be late, or reminding them not to be late. So
I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, Greta says he's late for Claudia. And I think I make a few more notes of times where with Doris, she says to Egon not to be late for dinner.
I was just thinking, I thought I remember him saying that actually.
And I think there's a couple other times that it's brought up. I think it's brought up three or four times, because I did notice they're really obsessed about not being late this episode.
Could it be an Alice in Wonderland reference? Because the white rabbit who goes through the, I don't know what he goes through to Wonderland, whatever he goes through. It's like a cave or whatever. He says, I'm late for a very important date.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think we have really much Alice in Wonderland references in this show yet. And it would make a lot of sense to have.
I should watch Alice in Wonderland again. I haven't watched that since I've had some very important experiences that I feel like make Alice in Wonderland make a lot more sense.
Oh yeah, I bet you'd love Alice in Wonderland if you watched it now. Maybe you'll watch it before our next podcast. It's on Disney Plus. So
that's a good idea, actually.
Yeah, I liked it. I watched it in college, and I liked it quite a bit. I mean, mm-hmm. I'd seen it as a kid, but when I watched it when I was older, I liked it. It held up.
Yeah. So then we move on to the coroner.
Yep.
Who
Speaking
I do
of
know
coins.
That. Yeah. So the coroner, he does have a name completely separate from everybody else's. He's not a Conwald or anything. Mm. It's just like his name's like Udo Marina or something. Just a normal name. So
sounds like
there
it.
Are other. So there are other people in Winden. There's the Frises at least.
I'm assuming there's a family of coroners, and they each have one child, and they're always coroners. They're coroners in every time period. That's the coroner family.
Yeah. So they point out the coins on the red strings from 86. They point out the clothes are made in China. Then they show a tattoo on, I think it's Eric's neck.
Yeah, I think pretty sure it's Eric's tattoo. I don't
was
think
that, that a My Little Pony.
I wrote down unicorn, but it was like a unicorn with a rainbow. It might have been a My Little Pony.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, if it's My Little Pony, that's the 80s.
Exactly. So, that's what I assumed it was. It's just like, I guess, but why would you have a My Little... So he's a brony?
Yeah, My Little Brony, exactly.
Okay, so Eric's a brony. He's on top of being a ginger, he's also a brony.
Yeah,
life wasn't hard enough already for him.
Right.
So no offense to any of our ginger listeners.
Yeah. More on the coins too. I mean, we see the coins a lot. And the coins all say 1986 on them. So yeah. We do know that, you know, these boys did make an intermediary stop in 1986. They didn't go right from 2019 to 1953. They stop in 1986, which is when they have the experiments run on them. And I really can't remember the point of the experiments. I guess it was just to try to make a time machine.
Yeah. I don't know if we fully know yet.
I mean, is it just that they do these experiments because they were always done and they're just a slave to time and fate?
I still think that the reason that these kids are showing up in the 50s is it's like you have to do a terrible deed to prevent a more terrible thing from happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like killing these two kids and like if they did it in such a way that it'd be so shocking by being a kid with red hair. So everybody would be like, well, we don't know this kid. We would know this kid. He's recognizable. And then a Middle Eastern a kid of Middle Eastern descent, which is brought up by the coroner.
Right.
Yeah. Coroner. I mean, so it's like, and it like really sticks out to them in the 50s. I think by the 80s, that doesn't stick out as much. Like, mm-hmm. I think diversity is a little more prevalent at that point. But in the 50s, I don't think it was. Mm-hmm. I just like they are like, are they Chinese at first? And it's like, could be. They're not from around here. That's what he says. So
yeah, he also
everything he says is very suspect.
And like, yeah, the eyes are burnt out as well, and which we know, but you know, to them that would be another thing that's shocking. And then their eardrums are burst. So we've heard about the eardrums being burst in the sheep. We've heard about it being burst in the birds. And in each timeline, the coroner is the one who identifies the burst out eardrums.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah.
These coroners specialize in burst out eardrums.
Yeah. And it's, Egon who's getting the explanation here with, I believe Daniel is also in the room. Daniel Conwald is also in the room.
So Daniel Conwald is Enos's father.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was Daniel Conwald in the last episode because unless he's time traveling, that was a much younger cop than he would, you know, he was not 30 years older than this guy.
Yeah.
So I think that was a different character.
Okay. Fair enough. I do know this guy plays a role in corrupting Egon as it goes.
Daniel Conwald.
Yes.
Yeah. He plays more of a role in season two, I believe, mm-hmm. but,
yeah, okay. he's the one who really is behind helping, you know, Hannah and Egon get together. So that would be, who would that be to Jonas? Jonas's grandfather? Jonas's great grandfather is helping Jonas's mother get with, yeah, okay,
with Egon. But it's also not Jonas's great grandfather by blood because Jonas's great grandfather by blood is Tronte,
right?
But his adopted grandfather, and yes, the brains are starting to hurt as we talk about this part.
So, as usual.
Yeah. All right. So then finally, Ulrich exits the cave. You know, it's always interesting when you see these characters start to like piece together that they're not where they think they are. And, you know, it's fun to think about, like, how long would it take me to realize this? Like, you walk out in the cave, immediately looks different. There's no couch there. There's like half of a gate. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously that this used to be gated off because the caves are so dangerous. By who? We do not know. And then we also are seeing Helge playing around. He's kind of playing soldier with a tree branch, and he's throwing pine cones like they're grenades. Mm-hmm. And he's down in the bunker. We do see those two dates written on the wall of the bunker, and we saw Noah writing those dates in the last episode.
In the future?
Well, in the future, I think it's in the past that he's writing those dates.
Or in the past, yeah.
Because the dates are written there. I think that's to identify that, like, this is taking place after Noah wrote those dates. So Noah either wrote those dates in the 50s or wrote those dates even further back. And they're still written there. And I think I would probably assume it's further back because I don't think that Helge and Noah were in that bunker cleaning. Actually, they couldn't have been in that bunker cleaning the floor because there is all that stuff in the bunker. There's the bed, there's all the pine cones and things like that. So I think that Noah and Helge were actually like probably in the 20s in that bunker, would be my guess. But the dates were November 5th, 1953, November 9th, 1953. And of course, we are seeing that bunker November 10th of 1953. Mm-hmm. So, then we get Egon and his partner, who you said is Daniel Conwald. They're talking about why would somebody murder someone? And why is this happening? Then we see the bullies, and they see Helge, and they start slap him in the ear, and they start to pee on him. And we don't know why they're bullying him. I guess just because he's kind of an odd kid.
I guess.
Yeah.
It seemed really weird.
Yeah, it very much came out of nowhere. And Ulrich comes and chases those guys away. Well, like they run away because they see Ulrich. Mm. Ulrich has an interesting conversation with Helge. He asks him if he's seen an older man who we know the man he's asking about is an older version, a 66 years older version of this kid that he's talking to. Mm-hmm. And Ulrich also tells Helge, don't let the bullies push you around, bite them if you need to.
Yep.
Which of course Helge will end up biting Ulrich when he's trying to attack him later on in the episode. Anything from this that you, I know you mentioned the bullies that they are just referred to as
bully one, number one, bully number two.
Yeah. So I feel like they're going to end up being significant. Because it doesn't really make sense. I mean, they're playing a role in getting Ulrich and Helge to interact with each other. So it seems like there's got to be more to it than just two bullies. But maybe they just needed that to keep the plot moving forward.
Yeah, but other than that, I think you pretty much hit on everything that I saw with it.
Poor Helge. It feels like as you're watching this, it's just like a tragic story. You're like, this kid is just beaten down literally and emotionally by his mother, by these bullies, by his friends like Claudia.
So far, it doesn't seem like there's many tragic, non-tragic stories.
That's true.
Hannah seems like the only one that isn't tragic, really. Mm-hmm. But also, if she didn't know and then her husband killed her, I don't know.
That's because she's a palindrome.
Okay. But I don't know why that would mean she doesn't.
That's why she sticks out, because she's the only real palindrome in this. I don't know.
Maybe
it'll end up coming into. I'm gonna post that in the Reddit and get all kinds of likes, or upvotes.
Upvotes.
All right. So then we're still following Ulrich. I think he's on State Road at this point.
He's at the crossroads. He's at the crossroads. He sees Agnes and Trante at the crossroads.
Is the crossroads where the bus stop will eventually be placed, or is that different?
I don't know. I'm not sure where the bus stop is still.
It would be interesting if that spot is like the same spot as the bus stop where Jonas meets his mother. Mm-hmm. Because this is Ulrich meeting his grandmother.
Yep.
Father. Agnes in a bright red dress. Mm-hmm. Agnes and her son Trante.
Yep.
And We do actually, during this scene, we get HG giving, HG's giving a monologue, which we keep cutting in and out throughout this episode to HG and the stranger having a conversation. But the one thing he says, it's very on the nose, but he says, imagine meeting your father. And he says that right as Ulrich is meeting his father, Tronte, as a young boy. So, then Ulrich, was there anything else from meeting Agnes? I guess they're new in town. We don't know where they're coming from.
Says they're new in Winden, and that I think at this point or later on, Agnes mentions how her grandmother loved Winden.
Yeah, that's later on, and okay. I definitely noted that. So Agnes also says that she's going to an address, and the address that she gives is currently where Egon Tiedemann lives, but it will be where Ulrich and the Nielsens will live. So when she gives Ulrich that address, he's like, that's my address, which again is like, Ulrich, have you not figured out that you are not in your, like, this, like, look at the car, you're not in 2019, this is not your address.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be pretty hard to believe.
That's true. I don't know, I still think if that this happened to me, I would just be like, I'm dreaming, clearly I'm in a dream.
So, right, and you'd sound crazy.
Yeah,
and if you're dreaming, when have you ever been in a dream that you remember where you're like, I'm dreaming, let me stop? Like, you go with the dream.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I've had lucid dreams where I know I'm dreaming before, but not where I don't know if I'm ever like,
I'm never panicking about like knowing I'm dreaming if I've had lucid dreams. That's kind of weird.
But that's true. I think that, you know, Agnes being in bright red is significant, whether that's, you know, I think on the first watch that makes you think that she's malicious. And, you know, maybe it's just that, you know, maybe we've talked about the different colors being different timelines. You know, I think it really would make sense that Agnes and Tronte are not from this time, that they're time traveling from somewhere probably in the future.
And HG during the monologue over the, basically says how because of casual determinism, it's impossible to change. But then he's like, because of human nature, you believe you're special. And that, you have more of a role in your own life than you do. So it's like it's kind of like the continuing battle of logic and heart that is throughout this show.
Well, and even
I can change it because I want to, because I love it, because, you know, and then it's like, no, you can't, because this is how it works.
Right. And even HG at some point talks about how he's changed. And I'm trying to find that part because I had it written in my notes, and maybe we'll get to it when we talk about HG, but HG talks about how you can't change things because the future and the past influence each
other. Yeah, well, he said all his life he dreamed of time travel, and says dreams change and other things become important. So, and then HG says his place is not in the past or the future, but in the here and now. So
you can change dreams. And we see a lot of characters having dreams, having nightmares in this show. But it seems like HG thinks the only things that you can change are dreams. Yes, he says he doesn't dream of time travel anymore.
And then as he's saying that, it shows him in 1953, Ulrich in his shop.
Yes.
And then, he shows HG his book.
Great casting on young HG. This guy looks exactly like what I would think a younger version of this old man would look like.
Yeah, he looks like a young Stephen Colbert to me.
Yeah, that's true. I did think he looked like somebody else too, but I don't know. I just think like some of the casting, you know, I think all the casting is good. Some of it really stands out, and this was one where I was like, oh, these are the same version of each other. So Ulrich arrives at HG's. We don't really ever see HG's shop and what it becomes in 2019. We see it in the 86 timeline. We see it in the 50s. I don't think we know any, I don't have any idea where this shop is. I don't, like, how does Ulrich know where this shop is?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. You never watched Man in the High Castle, did you?
I started it. I didn't finish it.
There's a shop that, like, it's like a consignment shop where they sell old, historical items, and there's a guy who runs it, and it reminds me a lot of the shop, of the clock factory or watch repair shop or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, again, we're getting these cross cuts between 80s HG and the stranger, and now we've got young HG. And when Ulrich is there, he's showing him the book. It's again this cycle. He's showing HG the work that he will eventually make. including a picture of himself as an old man. And HG's like, that's clearly not me, but it clearly is you, actually. And before we get back to the shop, we have the introduction of Claudia and her dog, Gretchen. Helge arrives for his tutoring session, and Trotte and Agnes also arrive at the house. So I guess that they're just like Airbnb-ing out one of the rooms in the house to Trotte and Agnes, because their house isn't like a big hotel.
Yeah, I think what this is kind of saying is at this point, the Tiedemanns weren't doing as well financially. So they needed to like share their house so they could afford to be there.
Yeah.
And also, I noticed Claudia's hair. The two loops on both sides.
Oh, yeah, really, I didn't even pick up that those were... I saw those and I just thought, like, it's like, oh, this is like Princess Leia hair, but...
Yeah, they really stuck out as loops, and there's talks of loops, I think, in this episode.
There definitely is.
And, yeah, and she's like the loop master, kind of, in a lot of ways. So, she's in orange, yeah, but the loop hair is on both sides and really sticks out.
Yeah. And we do, you know, we haven't gotten a ton of Claudia yet in this show. Obviously, we will get a lot of her. By the end of the episode, we do see the older version of Claudia, the white devil version of Claudia.
Yeah, and then Agnes makes sure to state that Trante's father is dead.
But she kind of, like, she says it, but she, like, clearly isn't, you know, she's hiding something the way she says it. She's, like, it's not just like, yes, he died. It was like, I don't know. There's more to it than that. So who is Trante's father? We still do not know who Trante's father is. And we don't know where they came from. I think that is going to be a big reveal in the final season.
Yeah,
where they come from. Agnes's brother, we do not know this yet, but Agnes's brother is Noah as well. Yeah, and then Egon comes home as well. And we get some... I feel like we get... like, when... Or no, Egon gets... This isn't when Egon comes back, is it?
No.
Later? Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah, no, Egon meets Agnes later. So,
because then we get the Janna and Enis at HG's Watch Factory. So yeah, this is where Ulrich finds out about the two boys at the construction site and immediately jumps up after hearing them describe it.
Yep.
They accuse aliens of this at one point, suggesting aliens could have something to do with this. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I really hope that we don't get aliens in the show. We're already getting alternate dimensions and time travel. Let's not get aliens. Let's keep this show realistic. Come on. yes, of course, we also already had Ulrich meeting his father. We now have Ulrich meeting his mother.
Yeah.
So, Jonas had the same thing where he meets his father and he in the past and he sees his father in the past and he sees his mother in the past. So, and they talk about the Doppler construction site is what they call it. For me, I kind of always forget that Bernd and, Helge are, their last name is Doppler. I mean, it would make sense because Peter's last name is Doppler and that's why Charlotte has changed her name to Doppler. But I just always am like Doppler. That's Charlotte. I don't think of Peter as like the head of that family. So
yeah, I mean, we see more, but it makes sense,
right? Yeah. So the Doppler construction site, now of course HG is the adopted grandfather, the adopted father of Charlotte Doppler as well. So just lots of different ties between HG and the Dopplers.
Yeah.
And they are talking back at the construction site. We see Bernd is giving the opening speech for the power plant and talks about the dominance of man over nature. And there is a police investigation going on in the background, so we're getting more of the power plant head versus the police chief. So we've gotten this in every timeline.
It refers to it as the energy of the future. Talks about uranium fission. So and then Ulrich had left his jacket at HG's.
Ulrich left, which is very important. At least when he left his jacket, he looks more like he's dressed in the 50s because he's just kind of in like a regular sweater. With that jacket, he really does not look like he belongs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I guess is a theme of this show. I mean, we have the stranger in his green jacket that doesn't look like he belongs. We have Jonas in his bright yellow jacket. And now we have Ulrich in his black jacket.
Yep. And then just to reinforce the point, Bernd is talking to Tiedemann, Egon, when he says whoever is against the power plant is who's putting the bodies there. So Bernd is thinking from a business perspective. I think I mentioned this last episode, but he accuses the coal plant people of this. So I think this is just completely just illustrating how little Bernd understands the scope of what's going on here. And maybe it's just how little everybody understands their role, you know, kind of, but so he thinks on a very micro level with it being a business move when it's most likely not the coal plant operators who did this.
But
that would be quite the twist.
What if, I mean, you said that, you know, the people put the bodies there because they were trying to make a statement and drop a very significant warning that would get people's attention. If they're doing that, they are against the nuclear power plant because of what the nuclear power plant creates in terms of the wormhole. So
definitely,
in a way, Bernd is right.
Yeah, in a way he's right. It's just a matter of perspective.
Mm-hmm. So, and of course, the way the nuclear power plant, you know, what we know of it in the future, obviously it's going to become a big part of Winden. A lot of people are going to think it destroys Winden. The nuclear waste from that power plant is what's going to create one part of the wormhole that we see at the end of season two.
Yep.
The drilling into the waste. All right. So then we see Claudia. She is showing Trante around Winden. She shows him the cave and says they don't normally go in there. Sometimes they go in a little bit more than they're supposed to, but they're not supposed to go in there at all. Mm-hmm. So this cave, obviously, you know, this whole city knows that there's something wrong with this cave. And she's kind of mean to Helge. Poor Helge. Just, you know, I might just have to give him an MVP point in this episode because I feel so bad for him.
What he does here.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so she sends him, but you know, he's mad. They're being mean to him. They're like, all right, finally we got rid of him. We're seeing the start of the Claudia and Trante romance. They leave hand in hand. They don't seem to care about Gretchen very much. They don't check to make sure their dog is coming with them.
Yeah. And she
probably
should
do that. No, I guess she's just more worried about Trante. She's just love at first sight with Trante.
And he looks like James Dean.
Do they say that in the episode?
That's what she said at the beginning.
Oh, really? I didn't pick up on that.
Your hair is cool like James Dean.
And Helge throws the stick into the cave. And Gretchen goes running into the cave after the stick. Good dog. Good dog. And we do not see Gretchen again. We will find out what happens to Gretchen later on. Of course, Gretchen time travels. So what does Gretchen like? What I don't understand about the cave is some people, when they go into the cave, like they have to go through so much to time travel. They have to follow the thread and they have to open the door and go through this long tunnel. And
I think that would be explained.
Okay.
I think that would be explained. I don't think that Gretchen just wandered through and opened a door. And I think that
somebody's in there.
There's yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's that somebody's in there. Someone is taking Gretchen at that point. We're led to believe Gretchen's a first time traveler, but I don't think that's necessarily true.
Yeah, because it's also, I mean, it's the same question I have about Mikkel, right? Like, Mikkel wandered into the cave.
Who took Mikkel?
Right. He had, that's a lot of work for a kid to do. Like, the people who are going through all of that work are, actively trying to go through the cave.
Yeah, and who came out and scared Regina when she was tied up?
Mm.
Who came out of the cave to do that? Why did they do that? You know, There's a lot yet to be answered that
about what goes on in the caves.
Yeah, I do believe it will be answered. I don't think these are things that can be left ambiguous in work, in my opinion. So we'll see. But
yeah, no, I do agree because it's like
these aren't ambiguous thematic questions. These are within a show where every mechanic is explained so thoroughly, been left. Not explained.
Maybe it was bullies 1 and 2 who are doing it.
Yeah, and maybe Magnus.
Yeah,
old Magnus.
Magnus and Francisca are just are doing that. That's what they've been doing this whole time.
But then so that basically covers that. Then Ulrich ends up at the police station, asking Egon about Helge.
Yes.
And
where his son is, and
and this all makes Egon very suspicious of Ulrich.
Right, because he's asking about a kid. He's like, where is Hogan?
Which mirrors when, you know, when Mikkel is asking about Ulrich as a kid when he time travels back.
Oh, yes. Oh, like father, like son.
Yeah. So.
I also noted in this that it reminded me a lot of Eric's father in episode one, where he's like making it like right in the lobby of the police station is like making a huge scene, yelling at the cops.
Yep.
This is just like what Ulrich had to deal with in episode one. Now, Eric's father just really dropped off the map. We saw him very briefly.
Yeah, he played his role. Like, I think that there are pawns in this game and he played his role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he, yes, Egon tells him about Burned and says, you know, Helge is the son, but Burned is the guy who runs the power plant. So then, you know, Ulrich is clearly suspicious of, or Egon is clearly suspicious of Ulrich, mm-hmm. starting what will be a decades long feud between the two of them.
Yep.
Then we get back to the Tiedemann house, which will be the future Nielsen house. Egon meets Agnes, and this is when Agnes reveals that her grandmother is from Winden. That yep. line is huge. I mean, who is
she? She also said she arrived today. She like made sure to like, I don't know. I just felt like maybe she was just saying it, but it was like very pointed. Like she arrived today, like literally, like she time traveled and arrived today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only question I have is like, where did they get the 50s car? But I guess they could find a car.
Yeah. Or it was already set up by who? I don't know.
So we, yeah, I think there's a lot to explore with Agnes. We do get more of Agnes in season two as a kid. I believe we do see her on the 20s timeline, if I'm not mistaken. But
I think
there is something more to Agnes. I think that's going to end up being a big key in this story. Yeah. Egon is rightfully suspicious of them.
Yep, and Egon's never home, just like Ulrich.
Right, yep. So. And just like Charlotte as well.
Yep, and Egon thinks he has to protect the whole town.
Mm-hmm. And the kids get home as well. So this is when Claudia and Tronte come back, and they're talking about Gretchen. So you know that Gretchen has been missing, and you know she mentions that to her parents. Then we get, you know, probably the most memorable scene from this episode, probably one of the more memorable scenes from the whole show, I think, or from the whole season one. We got Helge sitting back behind the mansion, which I still think this is the area that will become the future site of Michael's grave, but I couldn't tell because I don't think we really see this mansion in the future. This is the Doppler mansion.
I'm not sure.
I don't know what happened to this building. We'll have to pay attention. It's definitely on Forest Road, but I don't remember seeing this site in the present timeline. Mm-hmm. But Helge is looking at dead birds. So much like Charlotte, and you know, maybe that's a connection to the Dopplers. I guess, you know, Helge is going to be Charlotte's father-in-law.
And Francesca has the bird necklace also.
Yeah. So this family, the Doppler family, even though Charlotte isn't blood, well, I guess Charlotte is blood related because Charlotte's mother, who is her daughter, is Elizabeth. And her mother is Helge's blood because she is through Peter. So, well, sort of. But then we were also saying that we thought Peter was, well, I think Peter is adopted somehow. He comes from somewhere else. So very, very confusing. But either way, that family lineage is interested in the birds. Helge is looking at the birds. Then he starts to talk to Ulrich, and Ulrich realizes what he can do, or he thinks he can do. He wants to influence the future. This is kind of that thing that they talk about in time travel stories of like, if you go back in time and murder Hitler and kill baby Hitler, would you do it before he's actually done anything bad? So Ulrich decides that he is going to change the future, and he attacks Helge. Helge bites him. So he gets away and he chases him to the cabin. So that mansion is like close enough to the cabin that they were able to run there. Ulrich then picks up a, you know, he finally tackles him. He picks up a stone. he thinks about it, or like a, I don't know, stone or something like a stone, and bashes in Helge's ear. Looks like he kills him. Of course, we know he does not kill him. He just severely scars him, and locks him into the bunker where Helge was playing as a child earlier.
Yeah, so I noticed that the whole time Ulrich had HG's book in the back of his like pants. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was really weird. Maybe it just didn't fit in the back pocket of his pants. It was a weird way to carry a book.
Yeah, like the way you would carry a gun.
Yeah.
Tucked into your waistband.
Using it like a weapon.
Mm-hmm. And that's what he's using time as a weapon. So that tracks. And I'm trying to remember exactly what, and I guess I'll find out in the next like episode or two, but like how Helge survives this, because he does get bashed in the head pretty badly, but I guess he just
how fate works.
Yeah.
Fate, you can't change it no matter what, no matter how many times you hit him in the head, for some reason, something would stop him from hitting him the final time to make it a death blow. It was always going to be the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the gun inexplicably not working for Noah, all these things. It's the way you can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
Even knowing like, oh, he has a weird ear. Maybe I should hit his other ear or something. Like, it doesn't matter. It's already done.
Yep. It's the snake is eating its own tail, the chicken and the egg.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we get, we just get some montage as we get towards the end of the episode. Agnes and Doris are making a bed and they clearly are kind of making eyes at each other. We will see more of how their relationship grows. And, Claudia is upset because she's lost her dog. And then something I didn't remember, Tronte undoes his sleeve in a very dramatic fashion to reveal burn marks all over his arm.
Yeah, they looked like cigar burn marks.
Yeah, I was thinking that they were like a cigarette lighter from a car. But yeah, cigar burn marks would make sense.
Yeah, so I was trying to think if we've seen any characters smoking cigars.
Not that I could think of. I mean, we did see some people smoking cigarettes in this episode, but not
cigars. they weren't cigarette burns for sure. They're
too wide.
Yeah, so I don't know, but that will be explained at some point, I think.
Yeah, I don't think that was even explained in season two. So it probably has something to do with wherever. I mean, obviously, it's something to do with wherever Trotte and Agnes come from. So, and we did mention that Agnes made a point of saying that her husband is dead. Correct. So, and then the last big scene that we get before we'll go to the future HG stuff or the 1980s HG stuff, we get young HG from the 50s and he remembers that Ulrich's jacket is still there, so he goes to hang it up. And as he hangs it up, he actually sees a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And he's fascinated by this device. I can't imagine what it would be like in, let alone 1986, or 1986, let alone the 1950s, to find a cell phone. And it's probably very freaky. But he touches the screen. It makes the screen light up. He sees the family photo of Ulrich and his family, although I'm sure he doesn't know what any of that is. And that is how the episode ends. The time on the phone, you know, it's another clock. It's another version of a clock. It is, it says 2018. So that is 8:18 PM.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of eights there.
Or 2018 to show that picture was from 2018.
Yeah, it could be that too. I mean, I was thinking about the year, but the show takes place in 2019. So,
mm-hmm.
And this cell phone will be a key part of him figuring out how to make that time machine work. He uses some of the pieces from the cell phone to put into the time machine.
Everything HG creates the time machine for is from the future.
Yes, exactly. It's all that is all like loop.
The blueprint, the book, the cell phone, everything comes from the future.
Yes, none of it is actually created. So where did it all come from originally? Because none of it's actually created.
Yeah, it kind of makes HG a little bit of a fraud.
Yeah. Well, he's just a he's just another pawn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I was trying to think if there's any other connection between HG and Ulrich. I mean, they obviously interact. I guess that's just like HG kind of like interacts with members of every family. He interacts with Jonas. He interacts with Ulrich. Obviously, he's going to interact with Claudia, and Charlotte is his adopted daughter.
Yeah.
So, all right. So sticking with HG. We have, you know, throughout this episode, we have cut-ins to HG and the Stranger talking. And I did notice that when the Stranger arrived, HG says right on cue, or right on schedule, something about the time. The time was 11:05 when the Stranger arrived.
Yeah, he said like clockwork.
Like clockwork, that was what it was. And so they're talking about black and white holes, the Einstein-Rosen bridge. Mm-hmm. And then we cut back to them. HG talks about duality, but he also talks about the Trinquita, or the Triquita, which mm-hmm. is the Trinity knot. And he shows the image of the Sigmundus logo, the three infinity triangle.
Yep.
And he talks about the three dimensions, future, past, and present. And right now we've seen three timelines. So if you think it must be the 80s or the present, 2019 is the future and 1953 is the past. Mm-hmm. Although we know that will get expanded out more and more.
Yep.
One thing I didn't mention is when Ulrich goes through the tunnels, this is going back to earlier when he's time traveling, it's right after the scene. He goes left when everybody else has gone right. So yeah. Going left is what took him to the 50s. Going right is what takes you to the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And the Stranger gives HG his book, and he says he hasn't seen that book in a long time. Yep. Now I'm kind of confused by this because he must have written the picture of him in the book, unless he hasn't written that book yet.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he meant, is that
I think he's referring to when he saw in the 50s.
Okay. But he hasn't actually written the book yet.
He still hadn't written it at that point. So he's referring to in the 50s when he saw that book.
Okay.
When he was shown that book. So.
Because the picture of him is a picture of him as an old man writing the book.
Mm-hmm. So he probably, yeah.
And they talk during this scene, they also talk a lot about the number 33.
Yep.
And, you know, that Jesus was killed at 33. So that's a biblical reference. And the Stranger also brings up at 33, the Antichrist begins to rule.
Yep.
Right after he says that, we see a shot of Noah. So, you know, obviously we're meant to think Noah is the Antichrist.
Yep.
Then when we come back to HG and the Stranger, this is when he talks about the wormhole and he displays it with the paper, which is a common trope in these time travel stories when they talk about black holes. It happened in Event Horizon. It happens in Interstellar. But it is a good display. He shows a guy shining a light and then he turns the paper. And so the guy's actually shining the light on himself when it goes through the wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back to HG, and this is when he talks about things change, but you can't change things. But then he says, I don't dream of time travel anymore. That has changed.
Yeah, and again, during this time, the Stranger is looking forward in like dread, because to him hearing that, that's like the worst news to the Stranger, that you can't change anything, mm-hmm. and that we think we're more important than we are. He like definitely doesn't like hearing that.
What do you think it is that he wants to change? Just erasing his own existence? Or is this like about Martha?
I think it's about Martha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was what I took from this too, is that it was about Martha.
Yeah.
And then the next time we see them, she is talking about the eternal cycle and who decides the eternal cycle. This is when they're talking about, you know, kind of like time lords and fate. And after that, they then talk about time loops. And this is when HG says, not only does the past influence the future, but the future influences the past. And we're seeing the future influencing the past, you know, such as Ulrich going back and attacking Helge. It's a great example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything with HG is really the future influencing the past. The cell phone, as you said, the blueprints, the older version of the device. He says, chicken or the egg, what came first? You know, and as you get far enough along, it doesn't even matter which came first anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last, you know, the last interaction between the Stranger and HG, the Stranger tells him everything in the book is true. He gives him the older version. It's the version of the machine that's more weathered. So it's obviously been used a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
The Stranger mentions a few months ago, an incident at the power plant released energy. I want to destroy the wormhole. Winden is a festering wound.
Mm-hmm. Second time that's been used.
Yep. I that's why I definitely noted that, because you brought up festering wound the other day. But when he brings up the incident at the power plant, when energy is released, I guess that's the the apocalyptic moment that we see at the end of season two?
I think so.
So he says a few months ago. So this is, I guess that's, I mean, he's just from a different time, but it's kind of hard to track exactly what he's talking about. But we do see a lot of energy released at the power plant at the end of season two, which creates those wormholes. I guess at that same moment is when, right after that happens, that's when Adam murders Martha. So if all of this is about Martha, I guess it would make sense that, you know, he talks about that incident.
And it makes sense that Martha dies at the apocalypse, because for Jonas, that is his apocalypse, is Martha dying.
Now, the other thing I noticed is the clocks in this scene. So I don't really understand how this works, but when the stranger arrives, it was 11:05. When he leaves, the clocks say 9:49. The main clock right by the door says 9:49. I don't think that can be an error. I don't think that's a continuity error. There's got to be something significant. Now, is time traveling backwards? Were they talking for like almost 12 hours?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't notice that.
And then I also noticed all the other clocks as HG. So all the clocks read 11:05 at the beginning of the episode. All the clocks have different times on them now. So the main grandfather clock right by where, also grandfather clock. I think that's interesting with how many grandfathers we have in the show. That one says 9:49. So when Jonas is leaving, that clock is, it just doesn't make sense how that clock could read that. So it might just be a fun Easter egg. Or are they in some sort of weird time loop when they were talking to each other? Does HG's whole shop, you know, exist in some kind of wormhole? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. And then we see HG pull out his version of the machine, the one he's been working on. It's obviously a lot shinier, a lot newer. It's like bright gold, whereas the other one is like more of a weathered metal, because it's time traveled so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else between HG and the stranger that you wanted to note?
Nope, I think that covers it.
Okay. And then, the last thing that we get, well, it's not quite the last thing, but chronologically the last thing, we get the future bunker, and we start seeing more of these pictures of the different people and how they're connected. A lot more than we saw the last time we saw this bunker. Partially that's because we now know these different characters and how they're connected. I think that, you know, otherwise it would have been kind of a spoiler to show that. But we see three pictures for a lot of people. And this was something I brought up yesterday, is that we see three versions of a lot of these people. We see, you know, three different ages. And we see the pictures for three people, except for a few of them only have two pictures. And I wrote down Egon, HG, Ulrich, Katarina, and Hannah all only have two pictures. Whereas everybody else that they show, when they show like Claudia, for example, or Helge, they are showing three pictures for those people.
We see older Ulrich eventually, so.
Right. Yes, we do see older, but not on this chart. We don't see.
Right. Him. Yeah. But
And we see a red thread connected to Michael. So, again, following the red thread. And then we pull back and we see a gray haired woman. At the time, we don't know who that is, but obviously we know that is older Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
So, the White Devil is what her father will be calling her when he doesn't know who she is.
Yeah.
So, in this bunker, I believe this is in the like 2051 timeline, 2052, wherever Jonas ends up at the end.
Yeah.
Let's see if I have that time. Yeah, 2052 is where Jonas will end up.
Mm-hmm.
So, really good stuff as we head through episode 8, the Infinity logo, as you sow, so shall you reap. This was a fun one to talk about, because this is one of my favorite episodes of the season, I think.
Yeah, there's a ton. It's a great episode.
Yeah, it's like if you look at this show like a jigsaw puzzle, this is one of those pieces that like connects two big pieces that you've been working on, and you didn't have that one piece, and then all of a sudden a lot of things make sense.
Yeah.
And it opens a lot more questions. So, all right. Well, let's talk about MVP points for this episode. And you can go first with who your MVP is.
I'll give it to Gretchen. This is the only time I'm going to be able to give it to
her. The dog?
So, yeah. All right. She was supposedly the first, so Gretchen gets my point as a dog.
Big Gretch.
This is Stoner, so Gretchen gets the point. Good job. Good girl.
Good job, Big Gretch. Any connection between the name Gretchen and the name Greta?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's just they're very similar names. Why wouldn't they have a different name for
a dog? I don't know.
Going back to my, a couple episodes ago, I talked about my whole like reflective letter names and how, like all the letters that you can split them in an axis and they would, if you reflected them, the letters would appear the same. G is not one of those letters. So Gretchen and Greta, maybe they also don't belong and they are not the reflective letters.
Could be.
All right. I know I said that I was going to give Helge an MVP point because I felt sorry for him. I'm just going to keep piling on and I'm not going to give him that MVP point that I promised because I think there's somebody who had a more important episode, and that is HG. So I think HG finds some keys to making his time machine possible. So
HG is kind of like, it's kind of being at Kevin Durant though, because he got everything given to him on a good team. He has had to not screw it up. So like, I don't know.
So like, HG's going to blow out he's going to blow out his Achilles is what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't know what HG has really done throughout this whole show. I either am going to hate HG or hate HG by the end of this show. I've decided. So.
Oh really? Oh, see, I like HG. He's the father of time.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think I also could have given it to Ulrich, even though Ulrich does a bad thing. Ulrich kind of connects some things. He meets his parents. So, all right. Jonas still with 3 points. Mikkel with 2. And Ulrich, Tronte, Alexander, Egon, Elizabeth, Hannah, Charlotte, Gretchen, and HG all have 1 MVP point. So, spreading the love besides Jonas. Although Jonas is an advantage because he has both the the stranger version of himself and himself. So, All right. Our next episode is titled "Everything Is Now," which makes sense. And that is our penultimate episode of season one. Can you believe it? We're almost to the end of season one.
Yeah, flown by.
Yeah, it shows. It is so much fun. It's so much fun to watch these and. It is hard even knowing what happens to slow myself down. I cannot imagine how hard it'll be to slow myself down once we get to season 3. Gonna have to make sure that autoplay on Netflix is turned off so it doesn't accidentally go forward.
Yep.
So, all right. Everything Is Now is gonna be our next episode. Episode number 9. If you have not yet subscribed, make sure you subscribe to Digesting Dark. Anywhere where you get podcasts, it is now on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Spotify, on Google Play. I believe we're on Stitcher. Of course, you can find the web version of this podcast on anchor.fm as well. So anything else you want to add before we close this out?
Nope. Right. I think we covered it.
Cool. If you have thoughts on some of the theories that we talked about, if you are team loving HG or hating HG, let us know. Easiest way to do that is on Twitter. I am at Brooks ZA.
And I'm at Aaron JAY Brooks.
And we will see you next time to talk about episode number 9, Everything Is Now.
See ya.